If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteeFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. 913-912-4810. Masters coverage continues throughout the day and, of course, tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We got Masters tonight at 10 o'clock tonight because the KU football spring game showcase is there. Text says, 913-912-4810, I agree with you 100%. Mahomes can win with bad receivers, but he can't win with a bad O-line. Text says, Ladd has problems tracking the ball. Get Pearsall. Now, I don't know if he did that to rhyme or he really likes Ricky Pearsall. If it was just, Ladd can't track the ball, get Pearsall. Like, that's what Pearsall's running on in 2024. Because you got to have some sort of a rhyming call to your constituents. So
I will say with Ricky Pearsall, if you know, is it Matt Harmon with Reception Perception? I talked with him on Wednesday. And his guy that he's... Last year it was it Jaden Reed from Michigan State that went to and had a great year. That was his like dark horse. He was sticking his flag in him. I guess not sticking his flag in
him. You're good. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Man, I am just brutal.
Go right ahead. Keep going.
This year, his guy he's going to hitch his wagon to.
That's a good one.
That's a better one. Yeah. Is Ricky Pearsall. So if you like a guy who does a very good job analyzing, going through the analytics and just all the numbers, the traits, the tools, I trust Harmon a ton.
Yeah.
If he says Ricky Pearsall, that makes me believe that, you know what, that's probably not a bad guy to, again, hitch your wagon to.
Well, I've gone back and looked at a number of different things and different categories for all pro receivers and how many of those all pro receivers, what they looked like in college, and how productive they were in college. I get nervous about a lack of production for a wide receiver that's going to go into the NFL, and they didn't produce at a higher level in college. So that scares me off to a degree. And I get that, you know, not everybody you draft is going to be an all-pro receiver. But I want to sort of identify some of the things as to why, you know, these all-pro receivers we've seen, like as of late, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Devontae Adams, A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs, Cooper Kupp, Deebo Samuel, Calvin Ridley, D.K. Metcalf, CeeDee Lamb, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Puka Nacua, Brandon Ayuk. And then even going back to the, you know, Julio Jones and Antonio Brown and DeAndre Hopkins and Michael Thomas and Brandon Marshall and Demaryius Thomas and Calvin Johnson and Odell Beckham and on and on and on, like these things that they did in college and sort of recognizing and trying to find some sort of a connection in that. And I've done it for a few drafts, and there have been some guys that have matched up with that those criteria. A number of years ago, it was CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Michael Pittman Jr., and Gabriel Davis were the guys that matched that criteria. A guy who was thought of that was going to be drafted really high that didn't hit on really any of the different categories was Henry Ruggs. Really fast, and now we know what happened. That was different off the field. But even on the field, it was like, how good is he going to be? He's like really, really fast. Another guy that was close to matching up with the criteria, but he only played 2 years, and we're talking about production throughout a career, was Brandon Ayuk. And if Brandon Ayuk had another half season, he would have met all of these different markers. So Brandon Ayuk, I sort of put a star by. Now, it's not foolproof because Jalen Reagor and Denzel Mims were guys that also had some of those. So, you know,
oh man, was I hooked on Denzel Mims.
So there are some things that are going to, you know, stick out. Last year, so I what I do is I go through the top 20 sort of consensus wide receivers and look at what they did and then, you know, see who fits that criteria. Last year, there were five receivers that matched all six categories. Jordan Addison, Josh Downs had, you know,
solid
70 receptions and 800 yards or whatever. Tank Dell, A.T. Perry, and Rashee Rice were the five guys last year that matched that criteria, which is one of the reasons why, and I had talked about that before, it's one of the reasons why I was on board with Rashee Rice. There were a couple of guys in the second round, but we had talked about Rashee Rice on the show. And so when they drafted Rashee Rice, you know, on the draft show right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, you know, got on with Josh and immediately talked about it. I'm like, I know there are a number of people immediately on Twitter that aren't enamored with this pick, but I'm like, I like the pick. You know, it's a guy we've talked about, and I don't like it just because we talked about it. I like it because of a number of things that we discussed as to why that is. There are six guys in the top 20 that match that criteria this year. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze. He ain't getting them, all right? Three other guys that are looked at probably third or fourth, or second, third, or maybe fourth, but really second or third, I would say. Malachi Corley, Troy Franklin, and Jalen Polk are the other three guys. It's one of the reasons why I've paid a little bit more attention to Troy Franklin since putting this together, you know, a number of days ago. And I like Troy Franklin anyway. Like, there are some things there, like the drop rate this year is not exactly, you know, exciting, but...
No, not great.
Yeah. I do think... But I mean, if you look at his percentage of catches, like the targets to catches, it's pretty damn good, and he led the Pac-12 in receptions, and drop rates can fluctuate from year to year. So he's not a dropper of the football, but I think if you look at a turnoff, it's like, okay, well, Rashee Rice had a higher drop rate than you would have wanted.
Sure.
And he dealt with that earlier in the year. We know that was going on with him. We'll see what Troy Franklin ends up being. And I talked with Daniel Harms about this yesterday, about Malachi Corley, and he's like, you know, I'm not as high on Malachi Corley because of some of the things in the route running. And I get that, and that's one of the reasons we started talking about, you know, route running as one of those skills. But what I like about Corley is even if he's not Debo light, you know, if there's a Debo Samuel in the draft, it's Malachi Corley.
Yeah.
But what I like about him is we know the Chiefs love to have those, whether it's a gadget player, throw the ball down the line of scrimmage, have the guy in motion, the Mecole Hardman, you know, that they were looking for this year, the role that Tyreek Hill played from time to time. They did that with Rashee Rice, where they threw the ball down the line of scrimmage, and it was really his strength, like his size, that he would go and pick up yards, and he was good at it.
Sure.
But Malachi Corley, like, the majority of his passes are within 10 yards, and then he is just a beast. He's just making guys miss, like, in the open field, is incredibly productive. The yards after catch, he's a guy that, you know, you can use in motion. And I'm not talking about a first-round draft pick here.
Yeah.
Right? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm identifying guys that wherever they're at in the draft, those first three guys are gone. Like, it's shocker that they match a lot of the criteria. They're expected to be really good players. But after that, second-round guys, like, I think Corley, Franklin, and Polk would all be there in the second round. At some point in the second round. Maybe not at 64.
Yeah.
But I think at 64, one of them would be there. I'd be shocked if Corley, Franklin, and Jalen Polk were all gone by 64. Maybe they would be, but I'd be surprised.
I think Corley and Polk would probably be there. Yeah. I think Troy Franklin's gone. Troy Franklin was earlier on was known as he's going to be a first rounder,
yeah,
and he slowly started to slide.
Yeah.
I think the drop issue has been a big reason why.
Size has been an issue. He's a thinner build guy, like we talk about with Xavier Worthy.
It's the Oregon style,
yeah.
Right?
I've talked about Xavier Worthy, and I don't even remember if it was on the air or off the air with Matt Derrick, but Xavier Worthy specifically, like, he's not Devontae Smith, okay? So he's more, you know, DeSean Jackson than Devontae Smith. I caution people that look at Xavier Worthy's size and say, okay, well, Devontae Smith was fine, because you don't want to use the outlier as to, yeah, but thin receivers like that, you know, yeah, they don't succeed in the NFL, but look at Devontae Smith. He's done that. Oh, okay, well, let's not just look at the guy who was a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
You know, but Worthy to me is a little bit different than your other just speed merchants that are there. And we talked about that yesterday.
Yes.
So we've discussed that. So I don't want to just focus on that. But Troy Franklin ain't exactly, you know, Debo Samuel. He ain't exactly Rashee Rice either. You know, he's a guy he's 6'1", 175. He's not, you know, Xavier Worthy, 5'11", 165. You know, Devontae Smith was 6'1", 170, so he was an inch taller and 5 pounds heavier than Xavier Worthy, and he's a thinner guy. But if the Chiefs are looking for somebody to simply take the, like, if they're looking for a type, like, I think those are a couple of different types. A guy that can take the top off the defense, and the speed is dangerous. The speed puts fear in the defense, and we saw that in college. He was more productive than Adonai Mitchell at Texas, even this last year. Like, he's been productive for 3 years. And, oh, by the way, Xavier Worthy won't even be able to legally drink on draft night. He doesn't turn 21 until the 27th of this month. He's still he's played 3 years at Texas, and he's still 20 years old.
Which is interesting, because typically the Chiefs try and covet the younger players. Mm-hmm. Now, Rashee Rice does not fall into that category. Obviously, L'Jarius Sneed did not as well, but that was a second and a fourth rounder.
Mm-hmm.
First rounders, it seemingly seems like they like to covet these young dudes back-to-back with Karloftis and FAU.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah.
So I wonder how much that actually plays a factor, especially with a guy like Worthy. I don't know if he'll be there or not.
I don't either, and I'm not saying that, you know, you take Xavier Worthy and you're getting a guy. The Xavier Worthy didn't fall into the category because he didn't have at least 1,100 yards as a high for one season. Like, those are the things that those other guys all did. His high for one season was 1,014. So if he had 86 more receiving yards this year, he would then match all six of the criteria, and he would be put in this category as well. But it's not just Xavier Worthy. It's other guys, you know, that you can look at that at least have shown that they've had productive careers where they've been at higher level schools as well. Not just like, you know, well, this guy played at Division II, Division III. Malachi Corley is one that hadn't played at a higher level. So you do take that with a grain of salt. But those are two completely different types of receivers. Xavier Worthy, take the top off the defense, speed that scares you. And Malachi Corley, a gadget player that you're going to throw the ball down the line of scrimmage, set up some wide receiver screens, bring him in motion, little pop pass to him, maybe a reverse, different things like that. Maybe hand the ball off to him in the backfield, which we saw them do with Kadarius Toney.
Yeah.
Like, they're looking for that guy, and Toney wasn't it.
No.
He dropped the ball against the Patriots, right, when it was intercepted?
Yeah.
That was the Patriots game? It's the last target that Kadarius Toney had last year. Remember Mahomes going over the sideline and going, I just said that. You know, you can read his lips. I just said that. That was the last target for Kadarius Toney, was the one that he dropped, and it was intercepted. All right, they gave it a shot. They traded for him. He had an awesome Super Bowl, had the punt return, had the touchdown, whatever. Drop issues, but they tried. They used him in different ways, and it wasn't working this year. If they're looking for that specific player, it won't cost you a first rounder to get that specific player.
Are you fairly convinced we have seen the last of Kadarius Toney in Kansas City?
No, I'm not convinced.
Okay.
No, I'm not convinced at all. No. I think if, you know, the problem is I'm convinced as seeing him try to be forced into a number one or number two receiver in Kansas City.
Sure.
That ship has sailed. But does he have a role as six guys that make the team out of camp, six wide receivers? I think he'd have a role there in some way,
sure,
shape, or form. I just don't want him to be, Kadarius Toney can be a number one wide receiver. No, he can't. Let's move on.
Yeah. My question is, I wonder if they keep both Sky and Kadarius, obviously very different roles, but mm-hmm. if you're also going to, again, we don't know for sure, but if they keep the rugby player as more of a, where does he fit on the roster? Mm-hmm. Which means, are you keeping six wide receivers, or now you keeping five? If you're only keeping five because you want to keep this rugby player for the kickoffs,
yeah,
well, are you keeping then both Sky and Kadarius? I don't know. So which one are you keeping? Both, quite frankly, make no sense to cut contract-wise.
Right.
You have to go to the production, which is poor for both. And it goes to, well, which one's the least headache?
What happens in camp?
What happens in camp? So
injuries, you know. What happens in camp? What do they look like? If Sky Moore isn't forced into playing the X receiver? If Sky Moore is more of the guy that he should have been drafted to be, of get the guy in space, throw him the ball, and let him do some things there, if they go that route with him, yeah, I'm fine with Sky Moore being on the team.
But that's almost to your point with like Malachi Corley. They have a similar guy who can do that, which is Sky Moore.
Which is why if he's there in the second round and they don't take him, then I don't think it's like, oh my God, you're not going to have this particular player. Well, can Sky Moore be that player? I don't know. I don't know that he's going to be the guy. Because they tried to use him in the role where he was coming in motion and they do the pop pass. And
sure.
it wasn't as good as we saw with when Mecole Hardman and Kadarius Toney were both injured in 2022. Not 23. So when they traded for Kadarius Toney and Mecole Hardman was still on the team and they both were going through their injury issues, Sky Moore was the motion man. Sky Moore was the guy. Rashee Rice was still at SMU.
Yeah.
Sky Moore was the guy they were using to throw the ball down the line of scrimmage to bring him in motion, a pop pass. And it just wasn't effective. Like it didn't strike fear in the other into the defense. They didn't have to overly adjust. And so sometimes the ghost motion didn't get what you wanted because they were like, oh, it's ghost motion, it's Sky Moore, we're good.
But I wonder if it's different when you have Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice on the field with Sky in that role again.
As opposed to having
Justin Watson, MVS, and Sky.
Yeah, because Juju also had his injury things at that time too, but still.
And so where I'm at with Sky Moore, and I don't know why we're giving Sky Moore this much talk April 12th, but
he's on the team, and he's part of the receiving core, and he was a second-round pick.
And this is my thought is, I think Sky Moore has been put at times in a poor situation. Has he taken the best route to get here? Is some of the blame on him? Well, yes. But I think a lot of it's mental for a guy who I think is more or less a slot receiver who was forced to play on the outside because Rashee Rice was better in the slot. To me, Sky Moore's best trait or best role of making this team is if Rashee Rice, they believe, is more of an outside wide receiver, maybe 70% outside, 30% slot, that opens up a space for Sky. Sky is not an outside receiver. He's not an X. That is not his game at all. But at times last year, he was forced to be that. And then folks were wondering why. Well, why is he not getting open? Why is his route so poor? He's not good out there.
Yeah.
You're putting him in a spot where he cannot succeed. And so if they put him in the slot this year, I'm not saying he's a 1,000-yard receiver. Could he be a 500-yard receiver? Can he be a piece? Can he be a member who is just a guy who can go out there that you can trust? I think he can be that if you put him in the right spot. So I do think there's a role for Sky in the future. It's not going to be what everyone wants him to be, being a second-round draft pick. But I think he can find a role on this team.
If he's on the team, like he and Kadarius Toney, I think we'll find out a lot about what the Chiefs' plans are for those two guys or one of those guys, depending on what happens in a couple of weeks. If they draft two wide receivers, then, you know, and of course, then starting May 2nd, you can start signing free agents that don't count towards the comp formula for free agents. So that's, you know, pretty close to the draft being over. It's usually the Monday or Tuesday after the draft that the comp formula no longer counts. And then if they go get a veteran guy there, well, then they're looking at least one of those guys not going to be on the team. Because Rashee Rice is on the team.
Yeah.
Hollywood Brown is on the team. Justin Watts is on the team. Who you draft in the first or second round is on the team. There's four. And then you've got, you know, six guys. So you got Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney. There's six. Well, if they draft somebody else, you know, Cornell Powell's more of the outlier in the not making the team as a fifth rounder.
Yeah.
So you would guess that guy's going to make the team. If they sign a veteran starting May 2nd, that guy's probably going to make the team. Now you're talking about six guys before you even get to Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney. You're talking about six guys in the room there. And if that's the scenario, unless there's injuries, I don't see how both of those guys make the squad if they draft two receivers and then sign a veteran after the draft is over.
Too bad we didn't just take George Pickens, you know. They're the same person. We didn't take George because of the red flags, traded back for Sky Moore, but then gave up a 3rd and 6 to a guy with red flags in New York with Kadarius Toney, and now they're married together almost in the sense that they're both bad, and they both cost us, you know, draft picks, and a good one in George Pickens, I feel like.
Sky Toney and Kadarius Moore.
That's such a good point of you didn't want Pickens because of the red flags, and then you trade for Kadarius. Dylan, that's just phenomenal.
Well,
there's no consistency there. Either you want the production or you don't. I get not wanting headaches.
Well, I brought this up with Adam Teicher, and he didn't necessarily agree with my theory, but I do wonder how much of a, okay, George Pickens, they weren't drafting George Pickens, okay? We've heard that before.
Sure.
They weren't drafting George Pickens. That's fine. I do think there's a, at least, conversation and a debate of whether or not he should have been on their board. It's like, well, they weren't going to draft him. Okay, but why not? Okay, well, there were red flags. Okay, I get it. There weren't a lot of conversation around Rashee Rice with red flags, okay, when he was drafted. But then this happens and you hear some things. And then was it Keyshawn Johnson that tweeted out about this was why you weren't a first rounder?
Now, he said it on undisputed.
Yeah, not tweeted out. That's right. I saw the tweet of the quote,
like the picture quote,
for Keyshawn. But what he said live was, dude, this is why you weren't a first rounder. You've got the red flags, your immaturity, the things you were doing. And I'm like, whoa. I mean, I heard some things after the fact. And so I brought up the theory with Adam Teicher that if they're seeing what George Pickens is doing in Pittsburgh and they didn't draft him because of red flags, but they got Sky Moore, and then by trading back and getting the extra pick, now you got Darian Kennard not on the team, and Sky Moore maybe not on the team. I think he's certainly got a role, but depending on who they go and bring in, because he attacks that receiver room or he attacks a positional group, does Brett Veach, that is of substandard, that I do wonder if it's like, well, okay, Rashee Rice does have some red flags here, but you know what? We marked George Pickens off our draft board because of red flags, and we got burned by that. All right, can we bring this guy in? Also, what are the red flags? What are the issues? Is it immaturity? Is it quitting on teammates? Is it being a bad teammate? Is it just being a knucklehead? There are a lot of different red flags.
Sure.
Is he a pothead? Is he a coke addict? I don't know. Is he a guy that, you know, robs people for no reason? You know, have there been issues of relationship things that might have been, you know, behind the scenes that people didn't know? Like, there's a lot of different red flags that are there. But I brought the theory up to Adam Teicher. He didn't think there was anything to it, but if the Chiefs pass on George Pickens and they see he's pretty damn good now in the NFL and they got Sky Moore, are they willing to the next year when they're going, well, we got to have production at receiver.
Sure.
Okay, we went with the nice guy that was not necessarily the great athlete and a smaller guy, but didn't have any red flags. Now we need a guy that can frickin' play football. And this guy can play football. There might be some things here. We get him in here, and we, in the culture of the Chiefs, we'll be able to insulate that. And for a year, it worked just fine. But then, you know, he made a dumb decision.
And this is the most dangerous time for those rookies, too.
That's right. Or first-year guys that are, you won a Super Bowl,
yeah.
You've now got the money in the bank.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, this is also the first time they've had off since draft schedule of this year. Like, these kids that are going through the draft this year, their first time off with money is going to be next summer.
That's a great
point. Which is why Rashee, you know, and he goes back home too, kind of. Yeah. It's just, yeah.
It's a good point.
You have no idea what it's going
to
be like.
Yeah, I don't know if they then change their strategy to a degree of, well, there might. But again, it's why.
Everyone go to St. Joe. You go to St. Joe the second the season ends, you're going to hang out here.
But I mean, it's why I talk about there are different levels of red flags. The Chiefs may have seen something with George Pickens that said, nope, not in 1,000 years. We ain't taking that guy. And looked at Rashee Rice and went, we can deal with it.
Yeah.
We can deal with this, and the talent is there, so it's not a non-starter. But I do wonder if they had to expand their we can deal with this parameters, given the talent, that sliding scale of, you know, Nate's great line of Buddy Bell with Ronelvis Hernandez when they were fighting in the clubhouse, and Buddy Bell said, Ronelvis, you're not good enough to be an AH. You know, that sliding scale.
Yeah.
You know, you're not good enough to be an AH. You're gone. We're cutting you. We're sending you down to AAA because you're overeating. We're sending you to AAA because you're an AH. Your teammates can't stand you. And you're gaining weight a lot. And you're not all that good. So, bye-bye. That sliding scale of talent to what we can put up with. Okay? And maybe George Pickens, it was just too much for them to put up with from the talent. Where Rashee Rice, maybe lesser than, but, you know, do they expand their parameters of what is an issue that is workable, that they can deal with? Because you do need talent at wide receiver. You can't just have a bunch of choir boys that are out there and having fun. And that'd be awesome if everybody was a choir boy and was really good. And was really awesome. That's the perfect scenario. You want your head coach in college to be the most pure as the driven snow while also winning every single game.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Oftentimes, you don't get that connection. And so you might have to then color a little bit outside the lines to make sure the talent is there. And hopefully you can insulate that guy and it becomes more workable for that.
Yeah.
The Mike Tomlin line, does tolerance outweigh production?
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
The Herm Edwards, you know, Soren talks about it, the my guys. Herm Edwards is like, what, two or three my guys, which means this guy's a my guy, so it's my responsibility to make sure he stays in line. Okay? So it's my guy. It's on me. I have to watch this guy, make sure he's doing the things he's supposed to do. I can't have 10 of them on the team. okay? Because you can't watch them all. I could have two or three. That's about it. I don't think Rashee Rice is that guy. I don't.
Sure.
I don't think Rashee Rice is that guy. I think if Rashee Rice had passed on the shoulder and then got back on the in the left-hand lane and continued on, and then they eventually get off the highway and go doing what they're doing, we would have never known, right? Never known that that's, you know, that that happened with Rashee Rice. He made a poor decision. It was dumb. I don't think he's a guy that is going to be continually reckless with his career. I hope he's not a guy. I don't think so. I think the mistake of leaving the scene was dumb. It's going to cost him more.
Sure. Yeah.
But how he's handled it since then, so it's like, you know, he's fully cooperating with the police. Yeah, starting now.
Yeah. He compounded the issues and then he goes, oh, I can't make this even worse.
You didn't fully cooperate with the police when you left the scene of crime.
Yeah.
So starting now, now that they know who it is, now that I've got counsel, now we are fully cooperating with police. But talking about this is what happened and admitting to I was the driver, because can you prove I was the driver? You know, I was the driver. There you go. You don't have to prove it. I was the driver. That's monetarily, you know, penalty wise, you know, punitive damages, whatever it might be. I'm going to take responsibility for that. I'm dumb. I made a mistake, as opposed to, you know, one of those things, and my lawyer will get me out of this. It's all good. Because then you're going to do the same thing over again. Yeah. Then you're going to make the same mistakes. So I do think it's a real positive that once the action took place and once the decision of leaving the scene took place, since then, it seems like an incredibly mature approach about you made the mistake, own up to it, figure it out, learn from it, life happens.
He doubled the mistake. But he didn't triple the mistake.
Yeah.
He got to two strikes, and then he
and he's gonna have to deal with it.
Yeah.
He's gonna have to deal with it. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, and we all have to deal with Mick Schaefer. I mean, we all have to deal with somebody. We'll do that coming up on the other side of the break. More Zone next. All right, hanging out right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels, Mick Schaefer, KSHB 41 Sports Director, is hanging out with us. He's presented by Empower Payments, boosting your business and charity with every transaction. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. Mick, what's up, brother?
Hey, boys. Happy Friday. You had a little platty little golf look there.
Yeah. Yep. He's got the literal
turtleneck when it's going to be 80. I don't know about that.
He's got the 69 today's the high.
He's got the literal polo on.
Which channel are you looking at?
The one weather app on my phone.
What's Wes say?
63 degrees right now.
Yeah, I think 69 is the high, but still not turtleneck weather. Come on.
With 18-mile-an-hour gusts.
For him, that's like 95 degrees, 69.
That's really...
69 is like 96 for him, okay?
Yeah, it's the new 96. That's
what
people
say. 96.
I wasn't lying, Mick, with this last time. When I said I like it hot, I like it hot.
Interesting.
Okay.
I've had shorts on since 6 a.m. outside. Stood in line for volleyball for half an hour to get in at Bartle Hall.
For what?
Do you win a trophy, or...
Were you playing?
No, just pretending I love my daughter. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. So we called her out of
school. Loving your daughter?
No. 12U volleyball. Called her out of school today because the tournament started. And my wife was like, you can take her early, right? And I was like, yeah, sure, I guess. And she's like, I'll come later with my mom. And because they have to ref first. You'll know this. So... they don't play till 9, but they're reffing at 8. So you ref when you're not playing a lot of times, which means you have to get there at 7. I don't know why. Which means you have to leave at 6:30, which means you have to get up at 6. And so I got up this morning. My wife was up before me. She gets up at like 5:30 or 6 every day. I get up at 8. And so I'm brushing my teeth. I'm like, wait, why is the plan for me to go early and you to go later? I'm just like, I don't know. I just had stuff to do. I'm like, this is dumb. I got 5 hours of sleep.
Just got stuff to do.
But that's what we do. Just do dumb stuff. Yeah. So I've been to youth volleyball all day, boys.
Nice. Heck yeah, man.
Watching the Masters on our phone, walking over to Lowe's in between matches and watching over there. Two good groups they got on the coverage so far.
Was your amen corner when you got past halfway through that and you can finally get to the rest of your day?
Yeah, I have a lot of amen corners in life, that's for sure.
All right, past that obstacle. Thank goodness, everybody. Do the Royals lose again, Mick?
Ever?
Yeah, I mean just the rest of the year.
Listen, that's a fair question.
I think so.
It's tough.
I think so. I think it had to be asked. Somebody had to ask it. It needed to be said.
The Mets are crappy. And then it comes another game with the White Sox. There's the White Sox. Here we go.
The Chicago
and then
Royals.
The Orioles back. Time for payback because they should have swept that series.
That's right. Yep. Jackson Holliday in town.
The MLB is lucky that the Royals aren't like 12-3 right now.
They're lucky they're not 13-0.
No, 12-1,
right? 12-3 would be odd. 15. I mean, they might be 12-3 if they could go back
right?
and lose one less game.
Had they done two of those games, overseas in Japan, right? Like the Dodgers, those weird ones. Right. They went and played two games. They came back and played like three more spring training games and then started the season.
I mean, the fact that they're not 13-0 just shows how unlucky the Royals have been this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean,
well, they're trying to keep it fair. Trying to keep it close.
Yeah, I guess you don't want to come out of the gates too quickly, you know? And really, you know,
sandbagging. It's like golf handicap.
Now
you
can still surprise some teams. You can still catch some teams by surprise. You're like, oh, that's a nice start for that team. But, you know, it's still the Royals, even though they have the best run differential in all of baseball.
I mean, 39. But and the Guardians have 35, and nobody else is close.
Right,
to that.
Yeah.
39 plus 3 per game.
It's what we've said. The Royals can compete if it wasn't for this badass division they're in.
Honestly,
this really awesome division they're playing
in. It's early, and they've had three just routes, right? Which is great. They usually have three routes, maybe a season.
Yeah.
But run differential is like a big thing in baseball. We never talk about it because it's always bad in Kansas City, but usually at the end of the year, those are the teams that are winning. Rarely are you, you know, plus 105 at the end of the year and below 500 or something like that.
Dude, the Royals, when I got them to win the division before they signed everybody, they started signing, like they signed Seth Lugo and everything. I'm like, oh, I'll put some money on. They were plus 2,000 to win the division.
Oh, you're serious? I thought you were being facetious.
No, I put money on them. I put $10 on them to win the division at plus 2,000, so I'd win $210. But
what are you gonna do
or win 200.
What are you going to do when you retire?
I'm not sure. I don't know, but I am pumped about it. But they're plus 475 now. Like, I can cash out for $30 right now.
I put 10 down.
I can triple my money right now, 13 games in. That's how much Vegas is like, yeah, this is more legit than, you know, what we were doing before they signed all of those different guys. I'm not going to because, you know what, let it ride. Let's do that. I'm not afraid to lose $10.
Well, $30 is a cash.
I clearly am not.
I'm swimming in cash right now.
You know
what
I did the other day? You were like, this is Jason the other day. And like, you know what? Vegas, they're not on Nicole Reagan's how many dudes he strikes out.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it was 5.5 the other
five
day. I'm like, I'm just laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, taking the over on that.
That one hurt.
And he finished with 5.
You know who you can actually blame for that one?
You?
Did you tell him that?
That was me because
I had a nice little tasty parlay rock, and it was Bobby Witt Jr.
Straight up.
and a few other things in there.
Going parlays.
Everything hit besides that, and no one cares. There's three things I learned about. No one cares about your bets. Four things. No one cares about your bets.
Not true.
No one cares about your dreams.
Not true.
No one cares about what you shot in golf, and no one cares about your fantasy football team.
Not true.
Here's the deal. I find that some people, they'll care. More people will care when you talk about a bad beat, right?
Exactly.
When
they don't care about your
fantasy
wins.
Fantasy so bad, or you made such a bad, because that's
relatable,
disarming, right?
Yeah.
It's relatable. Like, oh, okay, there's somebody else out there.
Solidarity in numbers.
Nobody wants to hear, like, oh, my goodness, I hit this plus 7,000 thing.
Nobody.
Oh, cool.
Somebody wants to hear how bad you are.
Thanks,
and I'm really good at self-deprecation. I'm great at it. When I'm not bragging about myself, I'm deprecating all over myself.
So on Twitter, you know, somebody was like, well, why would I listen to you? You're wrong all the time. I'm like, well, yeah, I say the wrong ones. Like, it was, I was talking about how, well, I knew that Eric's Alex Carabans over under for threes was 1.5 because he ended up with one, you know, and like, dude, I'm like, no, I was fine on the national championship game. I was fine. National championship game. That was just one of those where I had like a 12 person dumb parlay, right? Like, plus 2,500. Odds of that happening. But I was watching, like, oh, Caravan's 1.5. I'll go the over on that one. Didn't hit it. Fletcher Lawyer for Purdue, 1.5. Over on threes, I'll go with that. He didn't hit any because they only took 7 as a team because UConn was not allowing them. But I was fine on that. But I'm with you, Nick.
So
people
tough when,
people
like
to hear the bad beats and, oh, that guy sucks too? Yeah. Awesome, man. That's cool. And they love fantasy talk. I want to hear about your fantasy team. Yeah. Mick, how's your fantasy baseball team
I don't
doing?
Play oh, cool. fantasy baseball or football or basketball or hockey or curling.
Okay.
Grow up.
Fantasy golf then. Fantasy golf?
I think I would maybe play fantasy golf before those, but I don't play fantasy golf.
Yeah. I didn't get into a Masters pool this weekend. I wanted to get into a Masters pool. I did not. Those are fun, but I probably would have put all of my money on Tiger.
I would bet Scotty Scheffler for every
Why
tournament.
Not?
Whatever. If there's a bet, it's Scotty.
Dude, he's in fourth place, and he's still plus 125.
Yeah.
plus 125. Yeah. I mean, that's an absurd number, right? There's no value in putting money on Scotty Scheffler at plus 125 right now. But the fact that, well, he's in, he's tied for second because DeChambeau dropped and Homa's at 7 under.
He dropped back to 6 under, it looks like, just now. Max Homa.
Oh, did he really? Okay,
yeah,
so Scheffler's
tied
for first. Yeah. So Scheffler's tied for first, and he doesn't tee off until 12:48. So 2 minutes. Scheffler's teeing off in 2 minutes. Number one in the world.
What? And just for those guys, and maybe they like it better, but of course the PM rounds had to finish up this morning and then get right back on the tee and start their morning rounds here. So what, 22 holes in a row, something like that?
It always ends up like one of the sessions, whether it's morning rounds or the afternoon rounds, has some sort of an advantage. Yeah. Like, it's like, well, you know, the wind really picked up in the afternoon. Oh, great. If you're out there in the afternoon, you got screwed. Well, you know, the rain was so bad this year, and if you played in the morning, you got screwed. Yeah. Well, in the afternoon, oh, that's awesome. You really got an advantage there.
I think it's morning yesterday and afternoon today is the advantage this year.
Yeah, morning yesterday because you're going right after the rain, so everything's soft.
Yeah.
So you can really go after the holes. I mean, it's obviously going to be tough.
And you get to finish your round as opposed to some of those later tee times.
Yeah. Bryce was getting dinner as Tiger's on hole 8.
Yeah. Right, and then Tiger was on hole 14 while Bryson was waking up. and that was finishing up his first round, hole 14, when he was waking up from the first round that did not finish yesterday. We'll take a timeout, come back, continue rolling. Coming up at 1 o'clock, I do want to talk some college basketball with Mick Schaefer.
Hi.
Are we learning something about the landscape of college basketball with what's taken place the last couple of weeks, coaches turning down jobs, staying, and the disaster apparently that it is in Lexington that they hired the BYU
one of their
coach.
Own.
You didn't get Dan Hurley, and then Nick Saban said no. So now you're screwed. More Zone next. All right, wrapping up this hour, you know, Dylan is like, this is a perfect 1 minute music bed for the Masters. So it sounds like a Masters update, but it's really the end of the hour bed. Right? I mean, but it sort of helps you go to bed.
This is from your dad's band, right, Dylan?
No.
They don't play this?
That'd be
music?
A lot more royalty money if it was, but no.
Didn't Johnny Herman write this?
I don't know. Sterling
Pee-wee
would know.
Herman, I think.
Oh,
I think it was Pee-wee.
Herbie
Herman.
Hancock.
Herbie Hancock.
There you go. Got that. Yes. Matt Derrick would know who wrote this. He said the name earlier, but that didn't ring a bell for me. So it was somebody in music that wrote it. So, oddly enough.
John Tesh, probably.
Golf, give me the driver, because I'm going to hit it. Pow, pow.
I knew that was a great button to push for you.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll get into some college basketball on the other side. We got the cuts before the show is over as well. More Zone next.